Welcome to the Shir in Ibn Ezra, Parshios, Tazria, Mitzora. I wanted to see tonight a few of the Ezra's and Parshios Mitzora that touch on some of the insights that Ibn Ezra has into the institution of Tzoras. Of course, we know that Tzoras is the major topic of Parshios, Tazria, Mitzora. There's an interesting Ibn Ezra right at the beginning of Parshios Mitzora, which I believe not only is interesting in its own right, but also ties into a number of other Ibn Ezra's in the Sedra. The Parshas Mitzora starts off by Dabar Hashem Moshe Leimar, Zoti Asarat HaMitzora B'Yom Taharasa. This is the Mitzora that applies to the Mitzora on the day on which he's fully purified. In other words, when the Tzoras itself has disappeared, but he needs to undergo a procedure to enable him to come back into the machaneh, to be allowed back into the Jewish camp. So this is the procedure that should be followed. The pasuk says, "Vahuva el hakohen." The mitzora should be brought to the kohen. The following pasuk begins, "The yotza hakohen al nichutz v'machaneh." The kohen leaves the camp to go out to the mitzora. The Ra Hakorin Vihina Nirpa Negat Sorasina Sorua. The Kohen examines the Mitzora and he sees that the affliction of Tzoras has disappeared, has been healed. Where is this taking place? So again, the pasuk we just read says the Yotza Hakorin Alechutzla Machana, that the Kohen goes outside of the walled city. Again, you know, in the Midbar he was sent outside of the three camps. In Eretz Yisrael, the Mitzora in a walled city was sent outside of the walls of the city. The Kohen has to go out to the Mitzora in order, he has to make a field trip. You know, I guess maybe he charges for gas and coals, I don't know. But he has to make a field trip out to the Mitzora for a very, very simple reason. Until the Mitzora has become Tahor, the Mitzora is not allowed inside. So, of course, the Kohen has to go to the Mitzora and not vice versa. Oh, so then we ask the question. So at the end of Pasuk Beis, what it said, the Huva El HaKohen, that the Mitzora shall be brought to the Kohen, what does that mean? What do you mean? Thank you. What do you mean he should be brought to the Kohen? He's not brought to the Kohen at all. The Kohen goes to him. In other words, there's a contradiction from one phrase to the next. The Huva El HaKohen, the Yotza HaKohen El Chutz LaMachaneh. One passage says the Mitzora is brought to the Kohen. The very next phrase says the Kohen goes out to the Mitzora. So how could that be? How do you reconcile these two psukim? So before we get to the Ibn Ezra, just to give a little bit of a survey of the other mafarshim that comment on this difficulty, which, by the way, it's interesting, Rashi doesn't comment at all, but many of the other mafarshim on Chumash do address in some way or another this contradiction between Behuva El HaKohen versus the Yotza HaKohen and Chutz LaMachaneh. So, to give one approach, right, the Sadyugon writes, Behuva El HaKohen, Behuva Inyono El HaKohen. His case should be brought to the Kohen. Right? So in other words, Behuva El HaKohen basically means the situation should be brought to the Kohen's attention. But of course, it doesn't mean that the Mitzora himself is going to be physically brought to the Kohen, because again, that's impossible. The Mitzora has to stay outside of the wall. He has to stay outside of the Machaneh. The Kohen has to go in, and not vice versa. Well, again, Tzoras is not going to be passed, you know, just by the Kohen being in his presence, right? But he's going to go and examine him. Again, the Kohen doesn't have to become Tamei necessarily in the process. And, you know, based on his examination, he can declare him to be Tamei.
One is making the assumption that the fact that the Kohen goes out of the city, he goes to the Tzorah. All it's saying literally is he leaves the city, he's out in a point X. And what the second question may be is, at some point Y, when the Sora is living or staying, the Sora is escorted to the Kohen in point X.
Okay, so very, very good. So that, something similar to that is actually an approach given by some of the other by some of the other mafarshim. So the Chishkuni, right, to give an example of that approach, right, the Chishkuni writes, first of all, the Chishkuni first, he gives two shots, the Chishkuni first quotes something similar to Rav Sadia Gaon, who bought him a coin. The Huva desires the Harasso El HaKohen, in other words, the matter at hand, the matter, the situation, you know, his case gets brought in front of the Kohen. In other words, we can imagine the Kohen sitting in his office, and they drop off the fire, you know, Shnevel is up for Sahara, you know, they drop the fire on his desk, right? So that's one Mahalo. What's that? Oh, so one second. So, but then the Chishkuni says, Zavra Acher, but who by HaKohen, right, the Messiah is outside the Machaneh. Uviyom Taharasso Nizin Oso El Ksei HaMachaneh Vakore Yosei Likrosso. On the day in which the Sahara is going to take place, they first bring the Messiah to the edge of the camp, meaning the Messiah might be 3 miles away from the edge of the camp. They make sure that the Messiah comes close to the edge of the camp, so that the Kohen doesn't have to go far, and the Kohen goes to the edge of the camp on his side. You know, again, maybe they meet at the wall, maybe, you know, they meet right on the border, maybe the Kohen steps over the border, but the point is that the Kohen shouldn't be matriach to go far. They bring, you know, it's a little bit, it's just the reverse of what Shelley said, but it's basically the same thing. In other words, they tell the guy, you know, they tell the Messiah, your appointment is to be 9 o'clock right by the city wall, and, you know, right as far as he can get, and then the Kohen goes out to meet him, and they meet at the border. The Bukhar Shor writes like that as well, and the Sfarno also writes like that, and the Sfarno just has, that they bring the Messiah to a place close to the edge of the Machaneh, Shiyuchal HaKohen the Kovod, who believe Rav Torah Lelechashlir also. Very interesting, the Sfarno adds that. It should be that the Kohen should go be covered to, you know, with a certain degree of dignity to meet the Messiah. No, it's not dignified to make the Kohen schlep, you know, miles and miles to go meet the Messiah where he is. Again, we understand the Messiah can't come into the camp, but at least let him come as close as he can possibly come. So it's not to put the Kohen out. Again, the Sfarno in a comment that anyone who's Osik to Sarchi Tzibur can appreciate, basically the Torah is sticking up for those who work on behalf of the Tzibur. Look, you gotta do what you gotta do, but at least don't make the poor man schlep more than he has to go out and meet the Mitzvah. So again, those are two approaches that are put forward by many of the Mepharshim. Either Behuvah al-Kohen means they bring a file to the Kohen, or it means that they bring him as close to the edge of the Machana as possible, and then the Kohen goes out to meet him. The Ibn Ezra gives a third shot, different from both of these interpretations. The Tam Vehuva, says the Ibn Ezra, the explanation of the word Vehuva is Kimo Chaveiroth. It's just like other examples in Chumash, where we find, for example, the usage of Vehuva, right? So one example thereof is that in Perek Yudimel Pasuk Beis, which is the very beginning of the laws of Tzorat, Adam, when a person has a discoloration of some sort on his skin, the Kohen should be brought, again, there's that word, the Mitzorah should be brought to Aaron HaKohen or to one of his sons, the Kohanim. What does Behuva mean in that context? So over there, the Ibn Ezra writes, Beard Sono, the Shalom Beard Sono. Behuva means he is brought to the Kohen and carrying the implication whether he wants to go or not. You can imagine that a guy who has discolorations on his skin, which might be Tzoras, is not like leaping for joy. Oh, goody, I have Tzoras. Let me phone up my local Kohen and see if I can get a diagnosis right away. I mean, maybe if he's extremely antisocial. You know, he might relish the opportunity to be labeled as a Mitzorah. But most average people would not run to be labeled a Mitzorah. So you can imagine, he's not getting in touch with the Kohen. But who by a Kohen? Drag him if need be to the Kohen. Bring the guys to the Kohen. Gritzalo, Shlob, Gritzalo. Whether he wants it or not. He haroebo echad yishimon and eliyak yishkenashiyobo. This is an Ezra. The implication of the word behuva, he shall be brought, is that anyone who sees this guy walking around with these symptoms should, you know, take the initiative and drag him to the Kohen. I don't want to go to the Kohen. He's going to say, I'm sorry. Yeah, buddy, but it is what it is. Come along, right? You have no choice. We're bringing it to the Kohen. And he's going to pass it one way or the other. Says the Ibn Ezra, that behuva, that definition of behuva, whether you like it or not, is what it means over here as well. Now here on the surface, it's a little bit harder to understand. There, when the guy's tahor, and the fact that he has these skin discolorations might make him tamei, we understand that he's not anxious to go to the kohen. The Baltic has to say he's dragged to the kohen. But here, this is the practice of his tahara. What do you mean for huvai la kohen? Drag him to the kohen whether he wants it or not. Of course he wants it. Wouldn't he want to become tahor? I mean, wouldn't he want to end this, you know, this state of being a mitzorah? So the Ibn Ezra writes something fascinating. He acharshi osur nega hasaras lo yirtze lahavi mashe mechuyav. It's possible. I'm adding the word possible. The Ibn Ezra doesn't say the word possible. The Ibn Ezra seems to assume that this is par for the course. It's par for the course that after the mitzorah no longer has the physical signs of saras, that he will be reluctant to go to the Kohen. Why? Because the Kohen is going to make him, as we're going to see in a few moments, he's going to make him bring karbanos. So the guy says, I don't want to bring karbanos. Right? Look, the saras has disappeared. I'm done. So, that's fine. I don't need to bring any karbanos. I don't need to bring anything. I don't need to do anything. You know, I'm happy to have the Saras has disappeared. Comes the post and he says, Vahuvah el HaKohen. If the guy's Saras has disappeared, drag him to the Kohen to undergo the formal Tahara process. Again, as we're going to see with the two birds and the lambs, you know, all of the Karbanos which he's going to bring, whether the guy wants it or not. Now, this is a fascinating Ibn Ezra. Because if you think about it, offhand, I would think, what guy, at the end of his period of being a Mitzorah, wouldn't want to undergo Tahara? So, okay, good. So we have to bring some birds and some lambs as karbanos. But the alternative is to be outside of the Jewish camp, to have to live outside of the wall of the city, to have to be, you know, socially isolated from everybody. Wouldn't he jump at the opportunity to be able to be rehabilitated and brought back in to the machane, into the camp? So the Ibn Ezra is making a statement about human nature, which I think is astonishing, but, you know, it's an incredible insight. Says the Ibn Ezra, there's a certain type of person who would rather stay outside of the machane and, you know, live out his life as an official Mitzorah, even though it's lonely and, you know, he's at a disadvantage. But as long as the skin disease itself has disappeared, he would rather do that than have to invest in the karbanos. Right? He would rather do that than have to bring the karbanos that he has to bring. It's so, you know, unappetizing to him to bring the karbanos. He'd rather live outside of the machane. You'll say, is there such a person? Presumably Chazal believes that there is such a person. It's a very famous Gemara. The Gemara says, why do when we say Kriya Shema, we say V'yohavtos Hashem Elokecha V'chol Levavcha V'chol Nafshecha V'chol Me'odecha. You should love God with your heart, with your soul. In other words, even if God demands that you give up your life, and with all of your money, V'chol Me'odecha. So, and the Gemara explains, once I say that you have to love God to the point that you will give up your life for God, why do I have to say that you have to be ready to give up your money for God? So the Gemara comments, because there's a certain type of person who prefers his money to his life, you know. Rachmana was funny. He gets mugged, right? So the mugger says, your money or your life? And he says, wait, give me a few minutes. That's fine. I want to think it over. You know? So, you know, there is such a person, say Chazal. There's a kind of person. Shimamono chaviv olav migufo. There's a kind of person who, he just doesn't want to spend money. So here's a guy. Here's a guy who's somewhat a hint to that. You know, the skin disease has disappeared? Fine. My social life is pretty lousy as a Mitzvah. I don't care. I don't want to bring the Korban. I'll live outside the Machana. I never liked those people anyway. You know, all those people inside the wall. I like it outside. I like being a little bit freer. That could be. It's an interesting comment, right? In other words, the guy ended up being a Mitzvah because of his Lashon Hara. So maybe it's a frumah cheshbon that he has, so to speak. In other words, he says, look, I got into this problem by Lashon Hara, so you know what? Let me stop talking. What's the best way to stop talking? I won't go back into society. I don't want to be rehabilitated. Right? I want to stay out here. You know, this is it. So comes the Torah and says, no, you must be rehabilitated. So who are you covering? You're going to bring those karbanos and be brought back into society whether you like it or not. Right? It's interesting because the comment of the Greyer made, so there's an interesting insight that's also in Hashem's Mitzvah from Shlomo Gansfried, the author of Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. Shlomo Gansfried has a commentary on the Chumash called Apirion. And in the Sefer Apirion, Shlomo Gansfried brings Rashi. Rashi comments that why is it that when the Mitzvah is beginning its Tahara process, one of the elements of the Tahara process is to bring two birds. Right? One bird is shafted, one bird is sent out, you know, into the field. Why birds? So says Rashi, birds chatter, birds chirp, and, you know, it was that chattering and chirping that got this poor guy into the mess that he was in. In other words, because of the speaking Lashon Hara, chattering and chirping, so, you know, that's how he ended up as a Mitzvah. So he brings birds in order to show, to remind him, that he has to be more careful about what he says. So that's Rashi. Rashi quotes from Chazal. Comes with Shlomo Gansfried, and he has the following kasha. Okay, so I get why he brings one bird. Why does he bring two birds? Right? So it could be, well, you know, it's hard to have a conversation unless you have somebody on the receiving end. But Shlomo Gansfried says something different. He says like this. A person might think that the antidote to Lashon Hara is silence. Right? Silence. If I don't talk, I won't talk Lashon Hara. Right? So comes the Tzar and says that's a terrible attitude. Right? Silence is golden, but it's not that golden. Right? And silence is not what every Jew should aspire for. We should aspire to use our words in a good way. We should aspire to use our words for Torah, for Tzila, for Chesed. The ideal of Yiddishkeit is not to be silent. The ideal of Yiddishkeit is to talk. What? No, but again, you know, if the ideal of Yiddishkeit was to be silent, Shas would be a lot shorter, right? In other words, you'd be a pamphlet, right? So clearly there's a mindless to talking. So I'm talking about those times when you speak of, means relatively speaking, you know, you should weigh carefully what you say before you say it. But I don't think anyone would advocate, you know, don't talk. They say, I wasn't there, but they say, because the time was a conversationalist. You know, that he wasn't, you think the Chofetz Chaim, you know, name telling him to talk. No, apparently he was like a geschmackes person. He talked, he was friendly, he was, you know, made conversation and things like that. That's what they say. And I wasn't there. But anyway, coming back to the Shlomo Gansfried, that's the Sefer Apirion and Rice, that's why the Chumash says you have to take two birds. Because the both birds symbolize speech. One bird symbolizes the prohibited speech, that's the bird that's shafted. But the other bird symbolizes not just the permissible speech, but the laudable speech, so the speech of Torah, of Tzila, of Chesed. That's the bird that goes free. The message to the Mitzvah is don't be silent. The message to the Mitzvah is use your words for good. Right? Right? Use your tongue for things that are going to bring life, not for things that are going to bring death. Oh, so the truth is that's really very much this idea. In other words, don't stay mechutz b'machana, come back into the machana, be rehabilitated, be a part of things. So who v'ayel akorin, even if we have to schlep you. So, you know, you have to realize that you have to come back in. This idea from the Ibn Ezra seems to repeat itself, I think in at least two Ibn Ezras, a little bit later on in the Sefer. So in Pasuk Dawud, we have the following, yes.
Now, I'm thinking also, that, you know, in the past, the rabbi spoke about the fact that people have a tendency to become demoralized about themselves and they feel very low.
Okay.
And this is consistent that a person should say, I'm no good, let me stay away from people.
Oh, right. Right, so this is also a beautiful insight. Right, so absorbed enrichment also has a beautiful insight. Namely, that a person has to believe in himself and his possibility of doing tshuva. In other words, maybe the Ibn Ezra is describing somebody who says, I can't be healed. In other words, I'm going to go back into the machana? No, I'm lowly, I'm nothing, you know, I have no chance of ever, you know, be rehabilitating into society. So comes the pasuk, he says, no, you can be rehabilitated and you will be rehabilitated, whether you like it or not. We're going to step you back into the machana, even if you're reluctant to do so on your own. You get a beautiful insight that a person, you know, a person shouldn't be so down on himself that he feels that he can't be redeemed, you know, in some way or another. So this idea, I think the Ezra runs with it, the idea of the reluctant, you know, the Mitzora who's reluctantly dragged to his Tahara, a very interesting image of the Mitzora who has to be convinced or, you know, coerced into undergoing his Tahara. I think it finds expression in Pasuk Dalet, the next Pasuk as well. Pasuk Dalet goes as follows. The Tziva HaKale, the Kale should command, in other words, should give the word, and he should take for the one who is being purified, for the Mitzora, two live, pure birds. Who's taking these birds? Right? You say, oh, well, the Mitzora is taking the birds. No, but that doesn't fit in with the pasuk. It doesn't say, Vilokach lamitaher shtei tziporim chayos. You know, with the direct article that the one who is becoming tahor should take the birth. It says the lokach lamitaher. He should take for the one who is the mitzora. So, who's doing the taking? I mean, the only other antecedent of that pronoun is the calling, right? I mean, the tziva calling, the lokach lamitaher, right? The Kohen should give the command, right? And he should take for the Mitzora, these two birds. Right? In fact, so that's what Ibn Ezra writes over here. HaKohen yikach mishelo. The Kohen should take of his own. Now, the note over here writes, that, again, it's a little bit ambiguous in the Ibn Ezra. So who's the actual owner of the birds? Right, so one way to read the Ibn Ezra is HaKohen Yikach Mishelo is that the Kohen goes into his own dovecot and pulls out two of his own birds to bring his karbanos. The notes here in the Ibn Ezra from the Masor Rav version of the Ibn Ezra do not interpret it that way, because again, I think it's hard to say that the Kohen would be obligated to give up his own two birds every time that the Mitzora is going to become Tahar. The notes here interpret HaKohen Yikach Mishelo. The Kohen should take his birds meaning the Mitzora's birds, but who's doing the actual, who's going out to the pigeon coat?
But that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
That means
the Mitzora
owns the birds.
Right, or it means that the Kohen goes out and, you know, buys the birds, right? In other words, you know, the Mitzora either provides the actual birth or it provides the money, but in other words, I would think, you know, if I was Kohen, I would think, you know, buddy, get your own birth. When you got your birth, show up, and then we'll do what we gotta do. I should go get your birth for you? Wait a minute, didn't you learn the Sparto? The Sparto said that we're trying to minimize the wear and tear on the Kohen. You gotta send the Kohen to get the birds. It's like, you know, you go to the rabbi, I'd like your help in putting up mezuzahs in my new home. Oh, beautiful, wonderful. Do you have the mezuzahs? No, I figured you would go to the sofer and get them for me. Okay, so sometimes that happens also, right? But it's not supposed to happen. In other words, it's supposed to be that the, you know, you want to put up mezuzahs, so you get your mezuzahs, and that, you know, the rabbi will help you. Right? So over here, the Kohen goes and schleps the birds. Right? So again, whether it's the Kohen's birds or whether it's the Mitzora's birds, but the Kohen is doing the schlepping, he's actually going out and getting the birds. Why is that? Right? Why should the Kohen be the one to get the birth? Again, I think the Ibn Ezra is consistent with what he wrote 2 psukim ago, because the Metzora is reluctant. The Metzora says, I don't want this. I want to stay outside of the Machane. The Kohen says, you do want this. And you know what? I'm going to get the birds. I'm going to bring you the birds. And you're going to, whether you like it or not, you're going to undergo the ceremony, and you're going to be rehabilitated and brought back into the Machane, whether you like it or not. But again, it's consistent. Ibn Ezra also is dealing with this reluctant Metzora who doesn't want to leave his state of Sarah.
What's the chesivus of the Metzora? Why doesn't the
Kohen
just say
no?
Because he wants to stay here.
Right. So again, so you see this idea in Ezra that we don't want to leave anyone outside of the Machane, even when he wants to leave himself outside of the Machane. A person doesn't take care of himself. So do we say, okay, if you don't take care of yourself, that's your choice, right? Or do we say, no, you know, we're going to make you take care of yourself, whether you want to or not. We don't care that you want to stay outside of the Machane. We want you back in, and we're going to do whatever we need to do in order to bring you back in. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, does he have to leave his family behind when he goes outside the...
Yes, he's not, I mean... You know, they can come visit him, but no, he can't come into the Machane. Right? So there's one more Ibn Ezra that also speaks to this idea of a reluctant Metzora. Right? So the in Pasuk Hey, again, the next Pasuk, the Tziva HaKohen, the Kohen should give the command, the Shachat is HaTzipor HaEchos, and he should shech one of the birds. Again, who's the he? Right? The shachat. He should shech. Who's the shachat? Right? So, again, it seems difficult to interpret it that it's the Kohen who should do the shechting, because then you would just say, the shachat ha-Kohen is ha-tzipor ha-echos. The tzibah ha-Kohen sounds like the Kohen is telling someone else to do it. The tzibah ha-Kohen. The Kohen should give the word, and then chef. So, you know, why do you have to give, if he's the one chefing, let him just chef. Why do you have to, you know, get up and give a clap? I'm now chefing the first bird. Very nice. Right? So the Ibn Ezra writes, Kohen Acher O Yisrael, right? Notice the Kohen is passing on the task to another Kohen or a Yisrael, which again, interesting. Why should the Kohen have to do that? In other words, what the Kohen should do it himself? And then the Ibn Ezra brings an interesting shot, which he doesn't quite like, but I think actually fits in with his general approach. The Yesh Omrim HaMetzora. Some say that the Meshachat, the one who shechs the bird, is the Metzora himself. And the way we define it is the Tzivah Kari, the Kohen commands the Metzora, shech. The Shachat is HaTzipor HaEchos, and the Metzora himself is the one who shechs the bird. So since there's an answer of a Hurachot, I think that's far-fetched. But, what's that? Yeah, although again, you get the impression from Chazal, Mar Chulin indicates the average person knew how to chef back then. Right. Yeah, you know, but the whole idea of Kabbalah started to happen later on in the Middle Ages, right? So in other words, in the final time, what's that? No, it's real Shrita. No, Malika is only for a carbon mamish. It's not a carbon mamish, which is whatever it is exactly. Right? But, the kitzers, what would the hashkafa behind the Metzora doing shchita? Right? So perhaps, again, in line with the Ibn Ezra's general approach of the reluctant Metzora, the idea is, if the Metzora is reluctant to come back into the Machane, we're going to schlep you back into the Machane. Ad kidei kach, we will make you shech your own bird. In other words, we're not going to let you go. You're going to do this, and the way we're going to make sure you do this is you do the shechita. That means we're going to force you to be involved personally in coming back into the Machane. Again, it's a tremendous, I think, lesson. You know, you have in life people who don't want to help themselves. We will make you help yourself. In other words, there's an achrayus on the tzibur. To take somebody who doesn't want to help himself, you know, come back and be rehabilitated, we will force you to be rehabilitated, because we know that ultimately this is in your best interest.
Isn't it the Metzora proactive in this case? So how can you be shechted when he's still in the stage of being the Metzora? So it's much more, it's the colon. Someone else does it because he has to be the recipient act in order to speak.
Right. Maybe that's why if an Ezra doesn't like it, you know, he says it's far-fetched. But again, I'm just trying to explain so from the perspective that it would be the Masorah, which again, Ibn Ezra rejects, it may fit in with the Ibn Ezra's overall Mahalach that we're talking about a reluctant Masorah over here. Okay, we'll pick off Balu Mayuz Bez Hashem and Hamed Ben Akasha Omer. Welcome to part two of the Ibn Ezra Shir, Hashiyot Tazriya Masorah. So, we spoke a little bit in the first part of the Shir about the Tahara process for the Masorah. So at the beginning of the Tahara process, again, as we mentioned, it involves bringing two birds. The end of his Tahara process, in other words, after a week has gone by, it says, Peret Yidal with Pasuk Yud, Vayom HaShmini, on the eighth day after that initial activity with the birds, Yitach Shekavashim Shminim, the Metzorah should take two whole lambs, the chavsa achas hashnasa tmima, and a female lamb, a year old, right? And it becomes obvious from the continuation of the tzukim that these three lambs are respectively a carbon ola, a carbon asham, and a carbon chatos, right? In other words, the three lambs turn into those three carbonos, which is somewhat unusual. In other words, we find oftentimes that a person will have to bring either a chatos or an ola or an asham. But what is it? What is it about the Masorah that part of the Sahara process of the Masorah should necessitate him bringing a chatos and an asham and an ola? Right? Well, why should he have to bring the three very different carbonos? So the Ibn Ezra makes the following comments, which I think we're going to have to unpack a little bit. The Ibn Ezra writes on Pasuk Yud, Shnei chvasim v'chavsa achas, v'avur ayos nega tzaras musa, al-maisa al-lashem. Since the whole episode of tzaras is chastisement over the fact that he spoke lashon hara, al-kein yakrit kevas echad la'ola k'mishpat kala ola al-aruach, therefore, you have to bring an ola, because the ola, as Ibn Ezra wrote back in Parashas Vayikra, we commented on this Ibn Ezra, the main role of an ola is to be mechaper for sinful thoughts, ha ola ala ruach, that which rises up on your mind or on your spirit. In other words, so you have to atone for sinful thoughts. The echad asham, kinishpat kol asham, and one should be an asham like any asham. When it came from the chatos, the female sheep is the chatos, kemishpat kol chatos, just like any chatos. So it's clear that the Ibn Ezra is trying to address this question, why an ola and a chatos and an asham, it seems like a little bit of overkill, but at least to me it's not immediately clear what his answer is. Okay, so because there's a sin of saras, so therefore, you need an ola and an asham and a chatos. Why? I don't understand. So let's try to understand a little bit about each of these karbanos. Right? Again, I'm not sure that what I'm about to say is what the Ibn Ezra means, but it's perhaps what the Ibn Ezra means. Clearly, he's trying to address this question. You know, why three different karbanos for this one activity? And clearly, the sin of lashon hara says the Ibn Ezra is something which necessitates three karbanos, right? So why is that? So, as the Ibn Ezra himself already indicated, the role of an ola is to be mechater for bad thoughts. So apparently there are bad thoughts that are associated with lashon hara, but it's not exactly clear why they're uniquely associated with lashon hara. Yeah, clearly the guy who speaks lashon hara, you know, had bad thoughts that led him to speak lashon hara, but that's true of any avera. You know, almost any avera is going to involve bad thoughts, right? How did you get to do the Avera in the first place? So, we're not quite clear why Sarat, more so, or Lashon Hara, more so than other sins, should require an Ola. The Chatos is the easiest to understand. Chatos is something that you bring for sin. What about Asham, a guilt offering? What's the Asham all about? What's that? Right, right. So, again, typically the Chatos is brought for more severe sins, but at least, you know, which is also a kasha, but again, at least I can understand that there should be some semblance of a kapara for a sin, But you're right. In other words, rechatos is generally brought for much more severe sin, or chiyuv hekares, or misusvezdin, or the like. You know that he would bring a chatos for. How does the ashram fit in over here? So here, there's the comment of the Sfarno, which again, I'm not sure if the Ibn Ezra is working with this, but I think it can help us understand the Ibn Ezra. The Sfarno makes the comment that an ashram typically is associated with me'ilah, with taking something which is not yours. So, for instance, a carbon ashram would be brought when actual me'ilah takes place, when a person uses hektish, you know, a sanctified object in a way which is inappropriate. Certain types of theft require the person to bring a carbon asham. The idea of taking something, misusing something which is not yours or which is sacred, is an idea which is associated with the asham. Okay, but how does that play in to the idea of tzoras? So perhaps, again, we're going out on a limb over here, and perhaps this is all wrong, but perhaps it's not. We can definitely get a refund. Because perhaps the Ibn Ezra would agree with an interesting idea which is put forward by the Rambam. The Rambam, at the end of Hilchos Tumas Tzoras, talks about the fact that Tzoras comes about because of Lashon Hara, and the Rambam has the following description of why Lashon Hara is so bad. Why is Lashon Hara so bad? I mean, you know, Chaim Heritage Foundation rails against the Lashon Hara. Why of all sins is Lashon Hara such a terrible sin? So Dr. Rambam is found. Zel Derech Yeshiva Chaleisim HaRishoyim. When evil scoffers sit around, they converse in the following fashion. They first get together, they talk about things that are silly. And then they progress from speaking about things that are silly to making fun of tzaddikim and denigrating tzaddikim. And then they poke fun at the Nevi'im and the words of the Nevi'im. In other words, if the tzaddikim could be wrong, so the Nevi'im could also be wrong. And ultimately, after the person doesn't care for tzaddikim, he doesn't care for Nevi'im, ultimately the person who started off speaking Lashon Hara will come to be kofer ve'ikra, to deny God himself, because if a person speaks Lashon Hara, they instill in themselves a certain cynicism, a certain cynical outlook on life and on people and on religion in general. And, you know, what started off being a denigration of other people can become a denigration of the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. So that's the Rambam, the end of Hilchos Tumas Tzoras. It's possible to suggest that the Ibn Ezra would agree with the Rambam's understanding of Lashon Hara, in which case Lashon Hara is such a severe sin because it's not simply, as in other Lechadera, I don't mean to dismiss it, but it's not simply making fun of people. Lashon Hara is a sin that can bring one to be kofer v'ikar, to deny the very existence of Ribbono Shel Olam himself. So that severe sin is deserving of a chatos and olon and asham for the following reasons, each for a separate reason. Chatos, because of the sin of Lashon Hara. Chatos is the kind of karbon which is usually reserved for a kind of sin which involves kares and misasdezden of the like. You're right. So Lashon Hara, in a sense, is abizrayu d'avodah zarah. In other words, the way the Rambam is presenting it, Lashon Hara is the type of sin that ultimately brings one to kfira, and it's a form of avodah zarah in a sense. You bring a carbon chatos for avodah zarah done to shogeg, so it's perhaps not so inappropriate for tzoras. What's that? The form is murder as well. Right, we don't find the carbon chatos for murder, but I hear. It's a kind of mi'ilah, of misusing something which is kodesh. That goes back to what we spoke about in the first half of the shiur. God gave us the ability to speak for Kedusha. We take that ability to speak and we turn it against the Ribbono Shel Olam. So that's Me'ilah of the highest form. So a carbon asher is certainly warranted. And it's wrapped up with Machshavah itself. Not the actual Lashon Hara which I spoke, but the Lashon Hara brings one to a separate issue, which is that of Kfirah, of perhaps denying the Ribbono Shel Olam. So that's an Avera of Machshavah, and the carbon Ola to be Mechaper for that which is Ola Alalua would certainly be appropriate over here. So again, I'm not sure. It's reading a lot into the Ibn Ezra, but it certainly, you know, can be, I think, a very, very valid track, you know, to put the Ibn Ezra together with this Rambam, and to understand that that's why Lashon Hara specifically has these three karbanos, which is associated with, which are associated with it. Okay, we'll pick up next week. Rav Hashem, Rav Hashem, Rav Hashem, Omer, Rav